Okay, so hi everyone and welcome to our podcast Sensational, the Special Educational Lead podcast, which is brought to you by Witherslack Group. You may have noticed that our little podcast has been undergoing a little bit of a makeover of late, but as always the content providers will stay the same and the aim is to provide advice and support to parents and carers. With this podcast we hope to celebrate neurodiversity, empower parents and carers, strengthen our children's superpowers and of course acknowledge the heroic efforts of neurodiverse families across the country. My name is Claire, I'm the Events Manager for Witherslack Group and I'll be hosting today's session which will focus on something that can have such a big impact on our day-to-day lives and that is managing sibling relationships. This of course is a balancing act at the best of times, but when we consider one, maybe two or even more children with neurodiverse conditions in the same household, that balancing act can become all the more difficult to manage. And so I'm delighted to welcome our guests to the podcast today. They'll be guiding us through our topic and offering some advice along the way. So today we are welcoming Emma Weaver, Director of the Early Years Service for the ADHD Foundation, and also Samantha Owens, who is a parent neurodiversity advocate and works for the Home Office representing diversity, inclusion and wellbeing. So now that I've given a little bit of an introduction, but before we continue on with our questions, would you guys like to say a little bit about yourselves and tell us about your work? Emma, maybe you can go first.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, everybody. Hi, Claire. Hi, Sam. This is a wonderful opportunity. I like that we've moved into podcasting.
Yes.
And another layer of support and another layer of technology that we're using.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. My name's Emma. As Claire said, my role, I work at the ADHD Foundation. And my role is to work with our youngest group of children. I'm the director of the early year service. So my job, I love it. I work with our little ones. I go into early year settings, but I also work as part of the national training team as well. So my job is to work with parents, professionals, anybody really that will listen and will support us in our celebration of neurodiversity. So I'm really excited to take part in this session today.
Great. Oh, thanks, Emma. Okay, so over to you, Sam.
Hiya, Claire, Emma. Thanks very much for having me here today, Claire. I am mum of three children, one of recently diagnosed with autism, although I've been fighting his corner for many years. I work for the Home Office, as Claire said. In my role, I'm fortunate to be able to help promote change on the platform of diversity, inclusion, and closely linked wellbeing. In my limited spare time, I have volunteering roles. I'm school governor, and more recently, moving sideways, I support parents on the neuro pathway, and hence why I find myself here today.
Very busy, both of you, very busy ladies.
Yes.
So that's wonderful. So thank you both so much for being here. So moving on now, we'll get going with our topic. So managing sibling relationships. I mean, What a juggle it is. I mean,
absolutely.
From a personal opinion as a mum of four, I have got my page clear, ready to take down plenty of notes about all the little pearls of wisdom I'm sure you're both gonna offer us today. So on with our questions now. So first off, I mean, we'll go into everything in more detail throughout our conversation, but to begin with, what would you say are the stepping stones or building blocks for successfully managing sibling relationships?
I think, Claire, that it's a great question and a really useful question for us to start with, because I think it's all about the foundations of the relationships. And once we've got those foundations right and, you know, each child and each sibling feels listened to and heard, then you can then build from that, can't you? So thinking about that, developing understanding of neurodiversity within sibling relationships, it's the establishing the relationship first before we're able to do anything like that. I think one of the starting points, and Sam, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but one of the things that I think is really important when we're reflecting on, you know, siblings, especially if there's more than two or three in a family, that actually the importance of providing individual feedback to each child.
Absolutely, yeah.
I suppose that need for each child's positive behaviours or accomplishments or things that they've done really well, each child is acknowledged for that. You know, so that there is a focus on the individual, not as the collective, I suppose, as the group, as it's about the individual as well.
Definitely. With this podcast chat in mind, this past week, it's actually also made me realise all the things we actually do as parents to manage that day-to-day smooth ship sailing of sibling relationships, and the amount of little interjections you have to prevent, you know, volcanic eruptions. But for me, I think really, when at home, it can get intense, can't it? So to get outdoors, do an activity with them, that also helps them build bridges between one another. If you have a plan of attack as mum,
I think that makes such a difference. I know that if I get out like first thing in the morning with them, absolutely. You know, just changes the whole feeling of the day, really, I think.
Definitely.
Blows up some steam and blows the cobwebs away as well.
I say to mine as well, you're stuck together, so let's just try and stick together.
That's really nice.
That's good, that.
Nice way of thinking about it, isn't it? In the sense that actually not work on this.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lifetime.
Doesn't always work.
Yeah, at least a long time that we're going to be spending together. I think that outdoors, I've got a real passion for outdoors and kind of how outdoors allows for teamwork in a way that indoors doesn't always allow for outside. I've got lots of nieces and nephews. I'm really lucky, and I took my sister's two out a couple of weeks ago, and we went river walking. Interesting. A three-year-old and a six-year-old. Brave, I'm not gonna lie. What was lovely was to see them too, even at those young ages, really supporting each other and
each other.
That outdoor environment definitely supported
that opportunity for
definitely. I think if you plan as well, which I found during lockdown, you know, rather than saying right this morning we're doing maths, but if you have that plan of attack where they know in the morning what's expected, and then we get outdoors in the afternoon when it's getting a bit too heavy, I really recognize that in the lockdown period, it just helps them knowing what's coming and what the day entails, and it keeps that sort of ship together. And also seeing each other around the table when they were all working, it helped them to stay motivated as well, you know, and not turn into chaos.
Yeah, I think sometimes if you're, and I think that's a great example, thinking about times when I'm a twin myself, and I remember being a sibling of a twin with a twin sibling, and I remember it being really unfair because we went to different secondary schools, and I remember feeling really hard done by that I was sitting in my bedroom doing homework while he didn't have to because his school didn't give him any of that, and being fuming.
Yeah.
Now at 34, still bringing it up.
That's not stayed with you, hasn't it, at all?
But it's that sense of, doing things at the same time, potentially, or at least at the same time to support each other.
Brilliant. Okay, so we'll move on now to our next question. So before we begin to look at sibling relationships and how to manage them, we need to consider perhaps empowering the neurodiverse child by helping them to understand themselves. So what can we do to help a child in this situation?
I think it's a really important part of a child's kind of experience of their neurodiversity.
Of course, definitely.
You know, something that we're doing all the time in our work and something that we promote within all of our parent carer forums and sessions is the importance of children understanding themselves. I've worked in a therapeutic role at the foundation kind of before taking on the early years role. And something that I found really beneficial was talking to children, explaining their condition to them, getting them to ask questions. How does it feel for you? Do you even know what ADHD and autism means?
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with children who have said things to me, like I've heard the word. But I don't know what it means, or my mum and dad have said it, or my nan told me it, or my friend's got it, and actually to empower them by helping them to understand it. And what I love is when they do understand, the sense of, if we use the strengths-based approach to that as well, talking about actually, yes, there's the challenges, but also look at these amazing things that you can do. Allowing the child the opportunity to then talk about the amazing parts of them and what's great about their neurodiversity.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think if you can arm yourself with that knowledge as a parent first, because I think even as a parent and a guardian, you're highlighted to it, you're thinking, So then you start your research, don't you, anyway? And even podcasts like this, Claire, and yours that you do, the one, the EHCP, and all you did was fabulous. It just gives that extra little insight as a parent. But I think pulling on the strengths, children are growing up in a more inclusive world, aren't they? Schools, workplace, communities. And I think the focus around inclusion of all. So if we can help our children themselves understand, in my house, you know, the diagnosed and neurotypical, that people present in all different shapes, sizes, colours, beliefs, and they're all worthy of opportunities. You know, I help my child to understand his own strengths and as part of his diagnosis with that. You know, we do make way and allow for uniqueness in him. You know, he has some real fascinating knowledge and passions that we nurture at home. But you know, as they all have, neurotypicals as well, you know, we've got a keen cook, a passionate footballer, a film critique. So it's just allowing them to flourish, isn't it, in their hyper focused areas, and not shutting the neurodiverse one down. It's allowing him that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think we're really lucky in that now resources are building, aren't they? There's more opportunities for us as adults to learn it, but also for
the children. And the ADHD platform is phenomenal, along with Witherslack site. I think there's some wonderful resources to tap into there, because as parents, you sometimes you can be a little bit lost in the world, can't you, with all this new diagnosis and where to go and what help to receive. So absolutely. And I do think, alongside the positives of understanding the uniqueness, I think it is important in helping them recognize the sensory sensitivities they've got, or, you know, we know that anxiety is closely linked. So as much as I do try and focus on the strengths and attributes, it's also having that patience and helping them understand their own responses, isn't it? You know, so they don't get lost in the world.
Yeah, it's about equipping them as well, isn't it? It's that kind of, if we're recognising that anxiety is closely linked, then let's explore with our kids what the strategies are when we're feeling overwhelmed.
To give them the toolkit sort of thing to manage.
Definitely.
And even what's fantastic and what I am so impressed with now is so many young people who are neurodiverse are now flooding the social media world with their stories.
Yes.
You know, we've got Josh.
Powerful, isn't it? It's
huge. So powerful. You know, I speak to parents day in, day out, and this might be parents that phone us up at the foundation of older, you know, children, maybe kind of going into their late teens, that kind of transition into becoming an adult. And actually, where can they go to listen to somebody that's not their mum, and actually TikTok, there's some great platforms on TikTok. The ADHD Foundation have got we've got a bit wild with TikTok now. We've got Josh B. Is your hip and happening in the TV? We needed that. Sam certainly not. And he does a TikTok, and it's great because it's all about psychoeducation. This is what ADHD is. This is how it, because Josh has it himself. There's also there's a fantastic girl called Jess McCabe, and she does how to ADHD. She's on Instagram and TikTok and things like that. But it's coming from The young people
themselves. Definitely.
And I think that holds so much power when a child or young person can listen to somebody who is of the same age or gone through the same experiences and be empowered by that.
I think
that's really helpful.
And then they can go on in, you know, in their life and their world, and this is how the world can hopefully shape change.
Absolutely.
And I think some of the things, I'm just looking at our next question now, but I think some of the things that we've mentioned around social media probably feed into this next question, I'm guessing. But following on from like our discussions then, you know, what would be a good way to introduce neurodiversity to siblings? You know, once you've got the child themselves sort of comfortable and you know, got a level of understanding themselves, how do we go about introducing it to the siblings, and what's important, what needs to be considered before sort of having that conversation? I know communication will be a big part of it, but you know, what are your thoughts?
For me, even looking back, as much as
you know, starting at the beginning, as much as the pathway process was fraught with emotions, and you know, it was hard to navigate at times, which is why I offer that support to people now. I just, you know, I felt a surge of relief at the end, and I couldn't wait to communicate, like you say, Claire, with family, and obviously, you know, the children in the house. I did take stock. It was emotional. And, you know, my husband and I, you know, we'd speak so much about it together and with our son as well. But this gave, you know, a new, you know, depth to it. So we spoke to him about the formalities of the diagnosis, arriving and the victory that he could now be understood further from this, and the liberation that would come from this. You know, he, with the correct scaffolds in place, is so important for them, isn't it? Because they're just not understood at times. His siblings, they were aware, because we spoke lots about how everyone's brain is, it works different at home. But we did definitely allow that time to share the diagnosis together. You know, my husband and I decided, you know, we'd do a celebratory, you know, takeaway. They could choose what they wanted. And that allowed that time around the table to give that sort of chat and variable responses from them at different points in the conversation. Because, you know yourself, they don't always come out with, you know, you sometimes share big news. Oh. It's later on, isn't it? So having that time, just, you know, eating and focusing on other nice things, gave that open chat. And you know, it's very much, I try and promote in the house, it's a difference, not a difficulty. You know, although I appreciate, I'm always conscious how a feeling of difference could impact him. But we maintain them check-ins, you know, and being around for him and any of them who want to talk through with it, you know, with me. And like we say, going back to it, I firmly believe if we share the knowledge together, the child, you know, the children, the house, they can develop an awareness and understanding to embed that future, like we've just said, and, you know, have a collaborative platform in their social circles as well. Makes them understand themselves, and then, you know, with the siblings, understand it makes them compassionate when they're outside in the world. You know, they recognize different things that are going on from what happens in their home, you know.
Emma, have you got anything you want to add to that one at all?
I think the way that I loved the way that you've used the term, that you talk about, you know, the fact that it's not, don't use the term difficulty, it's using the term difference. And sometimes it is just the language that we use, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, getting into that habit, which can be difficult, depending on your experiences as well. I also think ages of children's important to hold the You know, I think
definitely true. Yeah, true. Because he is a little older now. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So we, you know, I obviously work with our little ones, and we sent a lot of our sibling work around understanding of emotions. And I've worked with little ones who have created, and these will be the siblings of a child who's diagnosed. And it was one family in particular. The child was 8, diagnosed at 8, and the sibling was 5. And the sibling, there was no kind of neurodiverse needs there. But what he was brilliant at was creating feelings boards for his brother. We talked about how sometimes maybe your brother gets a bit overwhelmed by his feelings sometimes, and that our big feelings can take over. Brilliant. And then this little one created this off his own back, but it was just, you know, this is what my brother might be feeling like, and this is what I might do to help him when he's feeling like that. I think what was needed for the 5-year-old brother was a role. There was something in that little one that it was like, I need a job, and I think maybe my job is to do something that's going to make my bigger brother feel better. And it was a sense of responsibility, but not in a way that was kind of making him feel stressed by it.
Which was
really lovely as well.
And I guess for the older ones, like we were saying, you know, using the likes of Instagram and other people who were sharing their stories, you know, that's going to be a key part of it now, I guess, because that's, teenagers are all over that sort of thing, aren't they, you know?
Absolutely. And also, you know, you can look at the success of people who think differently, who are, you know, who are rich and famous, and you know, yeah, they've done fantastic, haven't they?
Very
well, like, yeah, and loads of diagnoses that, you know, they now share, thankfully.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's look at some practical things now. So what sort of practical stuff could be put in place to help promote positive sibling relationships at home? You know, what would you suggest?
Do you know, I think something that's really important is time together, but time apart as well. You know, like, right, actually, that, you know, time together is really important. That building that connection within the sibling relationships is key. And, you know, we talked about earlier, you know, being outside can be really helpful. But also for some children, and depending on how many children are in the family, having time apart from each other can be a strength and as well,
definitely,
particularly if it's allocated time with mom, dad, nan, you know, the adult within the family home. You know, special time with that person that's just for me. So, like, maybe as a sibling, actually, I'm going to get a little bit of time with my dad tonight, and we're going to go and do something on the Xbox, or we're going to go and do something out and about. But just, I think it gives the importance of building relationships, but also the importance of the individuality, and then being individuals as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Both strands are important, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. Yeah, we in our house, at the minute, we've been trying to create sort of like game time, you know, have that time, because, you know, electronics just take over, don't they?
Yeah.
So away from the electronics, particularly at the weekend when, you know, parents or mum and dad have got a bit more time. But yeah, at the minute, we've got Cluedo, so it's a little bit of a longer game. But if we do children versus adults,
especially
if they win. If they lose, then don't get me wrong, there's eruptions because it's all one of their fault, and then we get fighting, and then we have to try and make it positive, right? But yeah, I just think that it gives them that little networking together of team building and sharing their thoughts to each other. They can relish in that little victory together. Yeah, and another one for me is try not to compare the three of mine, you know, and like you're saying, I mean, celebrate each characteristic and individual trait that they have, you know, because mine are completely different.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to get into that, you know, this is not how your brother acts, you know. You know, because they are different, and, you know, you've got to relish in each of their characteristics.
And it's so funny, I've got twin boys, and I'll mention them later on, but I mean, they are, and, you know, exactly the same age, and all the same things, but they are totally, totally different.
Yeah.
Like you were saying before, and about you and your twin, it's strange how they're all so different. So yeah, we do have to make sure we focus on all the positive bits about each one, don't we? Hey, so have you got anything more to add on that point before I move on to the next one at all?
I think Sam's point about, you know, games together and playing together, really, really important. And also thinking about, I worked with one family, and they had a gorgeous idea where they got a jar, and each child in the family wrote down something that they enjoyed doing on a piece of paper. That piece of paper went in the jar. And on a Friday, or, you know, when they've got a bit of downtime or got a bit of family time together, it would be one of the child's responsibility, and they take it in turn to pull something out of the jar. Now, what I really liked about it was they might pull out their siblings, and it might not necessarily be the one that they want to do. And that can cause some tricky times. But what we're trying to, I suppose it's getting that across, that compromise and negotiation. And lots of sharing in each other's interests as well, which, you know, and accepting that actually this is what your brother might have put down today, but maybe next week it'll be what you want to do, and the importance of that shared time as well.
Definitely. The good one, Mia.
I think we covered, again, a little bit of this, my next sort of thing to cover in the last question, but I'll go through it anyway. It's like what I was saying before, I've got twin boys, and then two, when they can totally dominate my attention and take time away from my older girls. And, you know, as much as I try, as hard as I may, to try and distribute my time equally, it's just not always possible. They do tend to dominate sometimes. And I have heard that many families say the same sort of thing when there are both neurodiverse and neurotypical you know, children in the household. So can we offer any advice here? You know, are there any strategies to help parents navigate this to try and distribute their time, you know, between them, really?
Yeah, I hear you, Claire, totally. Family life is absolutely everything, isn't it, at points? So it's so hard to share your time. And I definitely have, like, one that dominates, and then I've got the younger one, so he requires more one-to-one. And then I feel so much guilt for not meeting the needs of the other one. It's hard, yeah. But I find in myself, if I can organise and plan, so if I can, like, sort of be up an hour earlier, which is hard when you've got so much to get done, but if I can sort of pack lunches and, I don't know, water bottles, dishwasher, you know, all them Monday jobs we're thankless jobs we don't get noted for, but then it gives the you know, that time then in the morning, you know, I can sort of help my youngest do his shirt and tie, and
yeah,
I'm not, sometimes I find myself, you know, blow drying one of the hairs and shouting out to the next bedroom.
Yeah, like, you shout the instructions from the door. Where
are you supposed to be? Yeah. You know, like, oh, this is not how it's meant to be. So I think, yeah, if you can be effective in your own time management, then you can plan and develop routines around that, can't you?
Yeah. Do you know, it makes me think about, sometimes we put so much pressure on ourselves, don't we? You know, and you think about, actually, as long as they're well, like, they're fed and they get to school if they're a school age. And I think something that when I talk with parents and carers in our parent sessions, it's that, you know, to cut yourself a bit of slack as well, you know.
That's an important,
absolutely.
One of the toughest jobs in the world, isn't it? And I think sometimes it's that we just take for granted the fact that we just keep going and we keep going and we keep going. And actually, sometimes just acknowledging, I'm a bit done in here, or I'm exhausted, or actually, that third child's been really tricky today.
Yeah.
I particularly like them today. Yeah. And that actually all parents experience it. And don't look at Instagram. I say this to all my families, stop looking at what everybody else is doing, because they project the perfect kinds of experiences, you know. And actually, the classic this weekend and last weekend, pumpkin picking is the big one, isn't it?
Seeing
lovely photos of family experiences of pumpkin picking, but I'm also hearing the backstories of, like, well, you ended up getting launched across the kitchen, or actually written more than you had to go home. But you don't put that on Instagram, do you?
Yeah.
And holding that in mind as well, isn't it? Don't compare.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Totally different to everybody else's. And it's about maintaining you and your well-being as well as a parent, I think, is so important.
That's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely, Emma. I think also it's good to give expectations to the children. You know, like, you know, at bedtime, it's so hard, isn't it, when you're juggling between three going to bed. And I think if you develop that sort of healthy boundary of, you know, establish a routine, and, you know, because bedtimes were just getting absolutely ridiculous in our house, and I think it was after some holidays, and they were just, and you know, when we're all locked down, it was just, oh, it doesn't really matter. But now, and then getting back into a routine was just really hard. So I think if you can, you know, give out what's expected from them as well, and you know, admittedly, it's never changing, and children do push the boundaries, but providing that structure and that expectation from them, it helps, doesn't it? With
We talked about this expectation. No, it's a good point. But the juggle continues, I guess.
Absolutely.
Okay, so moving on now. So there may be some families where achievement and balances between children in the house can lead to siblings having negative feelings about themselves. So, for example, like, one child might come home with a certificate for phonics while the other one is still struggling to master it, or perhaps an older child, you know, is having a really successful time in their sport and achievements while the other one, a younger one or another child, is really struggling to throw or kick a ball at her, you know, at home or at school. And so have you guys had any experience of this in your work or life? And, you know, what are your thoughts about how we can support the sibling who might be having those negative feelings about themselves?
Yeah, it's something that I love, and I've heard this, and it's been around for quite a long time, but I really like it and always use it, is sometimes we focus on achievements of the things that our children are doing. So, you know, achieving something that they've learned or achieving a skill that they've developed. And actually just achieving for being is also really lovely. So being a kind person, being, you know, having a lovely smile, or being, you know, helpful to someone. I think sometimes we focus on the achievement of a task or of a goal, equally as important. And you know, having those goals and having children work towards goals and motivating them through goals is really important. But actually also, if our children aren't quite reaching those goals, it's okay to point out what's good about them and that is an achievement in itself.
Absolutely, Emma, I totally agree. Thinking on that, I just think it's important to create a space for vulnerability. Sometimes it gives less pressure, doesn't it? And I think on occasions, you know, I'm guilty of it. Parents can pressure themselves. And there's so many extracurriculars now, which is wonderful that they've got the options and they can try, you know, different things and tap into different options that are there. But as parents, not to sort of force yourself and them, let them flourish in their own time. I totally agree with you, Emma, on that one. Even, you know, creating cardboard cutouts at home, or you know you can still take the small wins, can't you? Mine are very different in their approaches to learning, and that even their interests are very, very different. I agree.
So on to our next question, which I am quite interested to hear the answer to, because my girls could be the absolute best friends one minute and then the next minute it is all kicking off. So, you know, why do siblings fight? I always sort of think of it as being a negative thing sometimes, but what you know, it can be a positive as well, can't it? I'm going to hand this over to Emma because you've got some great insight into this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, Claire? I think it's one of the most important things for us to hold in mind, that although fighting, it can be one of the most frustrating things in a household and one of the most difficult things to juggle. Actually, if we were going to get scientific and a little bit kind of all kind of specific about it, there is positives to it, and it's from an evolutionary perspective. Actually, fighting teaches us skills that we need for life, you know, as we get older, skills to negotiate. And I was doing a bit of research on the positives of fighting, of sibling fighting.
Sibling fighting.
And I think one of the kind of positives that kind of really drew me to it was that actually rough play develops emotional awareness. You know, if you are hurting somebody, if you're having a little kind of rough and tough tumble with your brother or your sister, and actually they say, "Oh, you're hurting me," or they cry. Children are learning through that rough and tough play. Obviously, safety first, and making sure that everybody's, you know, safe and
of course,
And it's fighting to a point, isn't it? But it's also, you know, in some instances, it's things like practicing assertiveness, learning compromise skills, also thinking about dealing with power struggles. Like I am one of three, and all of us have developed into kind of very, very assertive adults, I think. You know, from our experiences with our siblings. Absolutely. I also think that you develop your sense of humour through that. And you learn how to deal with negative experiences. And how to manage those negative experiences as well. So, yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. And actually,
no, I always thought, fighting again. And then we did a sort of bite-sized webinar not so long ago when Emma sort of discussed the type of thing she's just been talking about. And it's like, I mean, you smell all bad after all. Sam, have you got anything you would like to add to that at all?
Music to my ears, to be honest. it's good. I don't know. Last night they were even fighting, and because we have pizzas for tea, believe it or not, and they were going on about whose is the best pizza. You know, pepperoni's better, no, margarita's better. And I was like, But yeah, I suppose I do try and turn it round to say, look, you know, there's a variance in choices, and you know, there's a difference in opinion. It's healthy to have individual views.
Yeah.
You know, if we all thought the same, it would be very boring. So yeah, I think there's building blocks to be had there, definitely.
Yeah.
You can learn to share the space equally, can't they? Have that platform to be listened and heard, I suppose, in
yeah.
a respectful way. But yeah,
despite the character to sort of push themselves forward, you know, with all that sort of confidence building and everything like that. Yeah, so I thought that was an interesting one, that one. So we're on to our last question now of our session today. So how can we support friendship and loyalty amongst siblings, and how much importance should be placed upon children having their own circle of friends as well?
I particularly like this one because I think it is, we talked about it, touched on it earlier on, didn't we, about the importance of being individual and developing your own identity as well is really important. I think the sense of family and the loyalty within family is really important, and the benefits of being a brother or being somebody's sister and the importance that that holds, but also that actually to be an individual and to have your own group of friends with your own set of interests that might be completely different to what your 15-year-old sister's up to. I think it accounts for healthy development of relationships as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I totally agree, Emma. I think, you know, they have that appropriate age, don't they? And they're less likely to sort of jump on one another and just start an initial argument over something, aren't they? They can have that, they can learn them rules of respectful conversation with their own peer group, can't they? And have that age appropriate interest and inspire one another. And, you know, they can learn and motivate from them similar.
And have confidence, like a confidant as well to talk to. With
I think the siblings does help. Sorry there, Emma. I think it does help to teach important life skills, you know, to go out and to build friends. So I think, you know, at home, like you say, Emma, it does help with that sort of what we were talking about earlier, that social and emotional skill. And also, I think it's great, you know, that they are siblings. I do say to mine, you've got a friend there in each other, you know, alive.
Yeah, so they've always got that person, like, behind them, haven't they? Sort of know that they're going to be there to support them type of thing. Like, I always think that about the girls. It's like, you know, they'll bicker and fight between themselves. But, you know, like, if anyone else tries to sort of, I don't know, not using a great example here, but say something not so nice to them, you know that the other one's always going to be there to sort of back them up type of thing, you know?
Yeah. And I find they do that when they're out, you know, out in the big world.
Yeah, like, I can say it, but you can't.
Absolutely.
And you know what I think is also, you've just maybe sparked a thought in me around role modelling your sibling relationships as adults, you know, kind of, so as, you know, for me and my sister and for me and my brother, you know, we role model successful sibling relationships to the children in our family.
The children, that's
like spending time with my sister now, and we do things together. And you know, and that actually, as you get older, your brother and your sister do become people you quite like spending. Well,
there's
people that you like spending time with as well.
Well, that was brilliant. We got through to the end of the podcast. Great. So, yeah, that was really fantastic. So much advice and experiences as well shared. And so I'd just like to say a really big thank you to Emma and to Sam for taking the time out to join us today. It's been really lovely chatting with you both. If you are listening to this, you are probably already aware of the advice and support resources on the With the Slack Group website. But if not, please do take a look at With the Slack Group. .co.uk/resources where you can find a wide range of support materials and webinars, and you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram. So thanks again everybody, and it's been a really lovely session, and you know, I hope everyone can join us on another podcast in the future. So bye for now.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for the conversation of inspiration.